Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com. The number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
You're listening to The Tillage Podcast with the Irish Farmers Journal.
Hello, and you're very welcome to this week's Irish Farmers Journal Tillage Podcast. I'm Siobhan Walsh, and we have a very busy show this week. The weather has held and it's great to get a good start on work and winter crops tidied up after a very wet winter. I know there are some showers in the forecast, and indeed as I record here it's Wednesday evening the 15th of February and there is rain hitting the window and a dark sky out ahead. But look, we'll have the weather report later on. On this week's show we talk field work with Tierlan's James Hickey, winning wheat with a Kilkenny farmer, premium crops with John Keeley, the changing face of plant protection with BASF's Dave Leahy, and we have a really great chat with an innovative UK farmer, Jake Freestone. So that's something to look forward to towards the end of the show. As always, we have grain markets and weather, and there's plenty of tillage news in the paper this week. It's a bumper tillage paper this week. Up front, I've asked around some farmers on how they're getting on and how they're faring out in the land rental market. Listeners to this podcast will not be surprised to hear that they're faring badly with land exiting the sector rapidly. That's online and it's on page 2. Our interim editor Jack Kennedy has it on page 2 and it's on page 4 as well in this week's paper. Look, there's farms that are going to suffer really badly as a result of the rental market at the minute, and that's being pushed, I suppose, by, look, the unintended consequences of the department's new nitrates regulations. And also then in some counties, solar farms are taking up huge amounts of land. That land then, you know, tillage farmers just can't compete in the market. We have it there in this week's paper, you know, 250 to 300 euro is kind of the max where farmers can go, and then land, you know, making 500 euro and over in some cases. So it's a difficult market to be in. But look, that's in the paper this week and have a read of it. It's Grain Awards season. It's kind of coming to a close now at this stage. But last week, a good Leishman, Paul Delaney, took the top prize at the Diageo and the Bort Malt Awards. They were held up in Guinness last week, last Thursday. Pat O'Toole was there from the Farmers Journal, and I think he'll have something of a long read on that at the weekend. But look, Paul features in this week's My Farming Week in the paper, and you can see what Paul's getting up to on the farm these days, and I'm sure he'll tell us a bit about his winning malting barley. And up next on the podcast, here is Tierlan's Grain Award winner. So it's Thomas Butler. We'll see what Thomas has to say. So Thomas, well done. You've just won the Tierlan Grain Grower of the Year Award. You must be delighted.
Yeah, I'm gobsmacked and a bit speechless. I'm really, really happy to be recognised for it. I didn't think I had a hope of winning it because it was such an exceptional year for crops last year. And there's so many good grain farmers around as well. Yeah. And I knew my grain was good. And I thought, talking to my friends who are grain growers, they all had really good grain as well. So to be the tops, the best, is left me a bit speechless. And I'm delighted.
Good. And you were the winner for the feed wheat category. So you had a KPH of 80.8. What did that crop yield, Thomas?
I did about 4, and just over 4.5 is what it did. Okay. 4.6, I think it did. Yeah. A lot of my friends did 5 ton. And I was hopeful when I went into the crop, yeah, it's going to hit the 5. I've never hit the 5 before. But it did about 4.6,
yeah.
4.7.
11% protein. What moisture? That was 14 moisture or something? Yeah, it was
dry.
Or
yeah, yeah, it was dry.
Yeah, very good.
I didn't hear it there when they were talking. I was getting by your water. I didn't hear what he said about it. Can you remember?
Very good. And look, you have a big focus on crop rotation on your farm. So what crops are you growing, Thomas?
So we grow peas, bachelor's peas, feed peas.
Oh, yeah, very good.
Human consumption peas. And we do beans, spring beans.
Yeah.
Oats, spring oats or winter oats, depending on the year.
Yeah.
Do winter barley, spring barley, malting barley.
Yeah.
We do winter wheat. I'm growing winter linseed for the last 2 years.
Very good.
With seed tech, for seed tech.
Yeah.
And then I grow a few heritage crops for my local mill, Kells Wholemeal.
Oh, okay.
I'm quite pally with them. Yeah. And I grow stuff with them.
Okay, so you have loads of premium crops in there, and you know the mill and wheat then is, I suppose, a very different to what other farmers would be doing. So you're obviously constantly thinking about what you can change on your farm.
Yeah, yeah. I really enjoy growing crops. I studied botany at university. It wasn't agriculture. I like plants.
Yeah.
And I get a bit bored growing just winter wheat or spring barley or something. Okay. And I like to try different things.
Yeah.
A lot of people think I'm mad growing 8 or 9 crops, but it's manageable. I do 270 acres of crops.
Okay.
And so it's manageable. I can manage that. I do it all. It's all owned land as well, which helps.
Okay. Yeah, big help.
But I have the time to look after it.
Yeah.
And I enjoy it. It's a challenge. A lot of these crops I'm learning as I go along.
Yeah.
The linseed and the heritage weeds.
Yeah.
We were making it up as we went along. We'd ask people for advice or help, and they'd say,
yeah,
let us know how you get on.
Okay.
And so we just have to try it.
Great.
And see, so I have a very good relationship with Kells Wholemeal.
Yeah.
They're friends of mine, so we trust each other on all the money side of things and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And he guarantees I won't make a loss, and I guarantee that I'll do my best.
That's what we need to be doing, isn't it? As tillage farmers, you need to be thinking outside the box.
Five years ago, when winter wheat, when wheat and barley were down 150, 160 a tonne or something, and it could all come in from Ukraine or Canada or anywhere, and we can't compete with that.
Yeah.
Like, it's great when wheat's 300 a tonne, 330 a tonne, whatever.
Yeah.
But when it's rock bottom, you've got to look at something else because there's doesn't pay the bills always.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we can grow great crops here.
Yeah.
We've got the quality and we've got the skills to do it here.
Yeah.
And we've got the weather sometimes, a lot of the time. But just looking at alternative markets and see where it leads.
Good dry day today. What have you been up to on the farm the last while?
I've been spraying off stubbles. We've done a bit of ploughing. I'm going to get some beans in end of this week, I think.
Okay.
And I'm going to put a bit of fertiliser on the winter barley as well this week.
Busy.
Ah, big grand. Yeah, sir. and then, we see how long this good weather lasts.
Yeah.
It's
Are you nervous as someone?
It's a little early yet.
Yeah.
You don't know I don't know if this is a dry spell to make up for the wet winter or if it's going to lash rain over a month afterwards.
Yeah. I think everyone is a little bit nervous about going
quite
out.
Know it. The conditions are amazing. I was walking across ploughed ground yesterday and I just couldn't believe how good it was. And it's so hard not to go. But I think one of the big skills as a tillage farm is just patience.
Yeah.
Wait till things are right. Yeah, just wait.
Very good. Thanks very much, Thomas, and congratulations on your award. It was great to talk to you.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure.
Thanks to Thomas for that chat. Really great to hear the innovation going on that farm, especially with the flower, with his neighbour, and growing peas as well for bachelors. You know, it's great to have Irish peas on the shelf. Now, to keep up to date with the fieldwork, here's Thomas's Tierlan agronomist, James Hickey. You're out in the fields this weather, everyone's out. What are crops looking like?
Crops are probably a mixed bag, Siobhan.
Yeah.
A mixed bag there in terms of establishment and plant counts and that. There are some patches missing in fields and whatever it may be, but I suppose there's a big difference from this time last year, I suppose. But
You're in Kilkenny, Waterford. What's winter area like? Is it back much or...?
Yeah, I'd say winter barley is probably back 25%.
Okay.
But winter wheat seems to be back quite a lot.
Yeah.
In the area.
Yeah.
Could be back as close as 35%. So.
And do people manage to get out with their pre-emergence sprays, or are they after tidying up, or do they still have stuff to do?
Yeah, I'd say probably the last 10-20% has been done this week, but quite some of the bigger scale would have pre-emed, which is I suppose in hindsight is actually working out to be a great job. Okay, you know?
Yeah. Fear of virus down there, I suppose, is there, or did people get
there is, and I suppose that's how guys got caught. They tried to get the balance between sowing there to getting the crop established. So unfortunately this year, I suppose that's a bit later, the worse it got for barley, you know.
Yeah, it's a fine balance, isn't it? And like, has the area of oilseed rape increased, or are people going with beans now, or what's their
rape goals? Rape has gone up quite a bit within the area. Yeah. I'm looking okay. It's probably a GAI of 1 or a little bit under it.
Okay.
It is back. This time last year, I suppose, was exceptional. It was probably nearly at an average of 1.4 plus. So
yeah.
It will probably need that extra kick of nitrogen a bit quicker this season, the next few weeks.
Is people out with nitrogen now?
They are, and some of the rapes there that are below that 0.8 GAI, that they're going to give it a shove, like, yeah.
Okay, yeah.
And some of the thinner winter crops will probably see 20, 30 units, maybe a rake-based nitrogen there in the next week or so as well, just to keep it together, give it a push, yeah.
Yeah, a lot of winter barley like seem to hold its colour very well during the winter.
It did,
what's your advice to your growers now with those crops?
Yeah, well, like, I suppose, like, it depends on plant counts and condition it's in, but like, we'll probably, I'd say from past, we've always found some benefit there, giving it a little trickle.
Yeah.
Before the weather really breaks.
Yeah.
Because there's a tendency when the weather breaks, we could be out of the field for 3 weeks. So so we might just tend to give it maybe 20, 25 units per acre.
Yeah.
Especially hybrid barley in particular. Yeah. Like, yeah.
Yeah, protect the tillers and the leaves that are there is the main
especially
thing.
Especially after a wet winter, it's like the root system, the root structure and things of winter barley is just not quite as good as you'd like it to be.
Yeah.
But that comes down to the wet month or two we got, you know.
Yeah. Are people getting itchy feet and starting to sow, or are people getting spring barley?
Yeah, yeah. Well, no, I think spring barley, we've probably learned our lesson.
Good, yeah.
we've set off it. A couple of guys went us quite early last year. We got considerably poor weather after it.
Yeah, okay, good.
But we have plenty of beans going in at the moment.
That's good,
in the area, especially in the heavier parts of the county there, so.
Do you think that area is going to go up, or?
It will in certain counties, I think. Yeah. I think some of the lighter soils, rape has probably taken that.
Yeah, that's what I was just going to say. People have probably gone with rape and there's no more rape.
Yeah, some of the heavier ground beans, but it will go up. It's probably hard to gauge.
Yeah.
It might be difficult to get up to where it might be predicting, but...
Yeah. And Glanbia are looking for gluten-free oats. Is there much more interest from growers?
There is, quite a bit. And I suppose from our point of view, there was a bit of an opening. But some ground didn't go into first wheat, and there was ground available. And I suppose the tillage incentive scheme is attractive for ploughing up grassland in places there too. So, we're quite there. We're just near enough full there at this stage, so we're pleased enough. But so it'll be a fair undertaking to double the acreage, but there's a bit of planning involved. So I'm sure that will come in all in good time.
Thanks to James for that insight into what was going on in the fields this week. I spoke to James on Monday, that was. So there was plenty online as well from Tierlan. There's a story there. Look, positive stories coming from that at the minute. Look, Tierlan doubled the sales of its oat products last year. We heard there from James about the oat contracts, and John Keeley, the head of grains, will talk to us about that now as well. And we'll have a spread in next week's paper on the Innovation and Research Centre down in Ballaragget, where they're doing huge amounts of work on oats and oat products, and we'll have some more interviews from the researchers down there as well. But here's John Keeley now, the head of grains. John, we're after having a great day here at the Grain Awards. Like, it's a good dry day. They could be out in the fields, but they're all very happy to be here and be recognised for their grain, and it's very important to do that.
Oh, absolutely. Listen, this is something that we started up, I think it was back in 2018, so the awards were probably something that had kind of fallen away. But to me, when you're at a day like this and you've got, you know, 15 odd farms represented in a room and they're celebrating, it is like... 2022 was a year like never before, and these growers are the best of the best, and I think they came into the room feeling good and they went away feeling even better.
Yeah.
You know, so I think it's important to recognise and to celebrate when things go well. So there's plenty of times when it goes the other way.
Yeah, John Murphy said earlier on it was a year for good grain, like, so it's a real big achievement to get into the room this year, you know.
Absolutely, yeah, the standard is very high, and sure, Donal Maloney, our grains manager, has a big role in terms of, you know, managing the whole grain intake, but like, he's seen results like he's never seen before in terms of quality, and then the weather was so good at harvest, we had grain coming in really, really dry. And so listen, it was just a dream. That probably culminated. We had our biggest grain intake in a week ever, basically through our branches and through our feed mills and through our various drying locations. We got in over 65,000 tonne in a week, which wouldn't have been possible if grain was coming in at high moisture. So listen, everything went well. Yeah. Everything went well.
There was a lot of categories today, 13, and then the overall winner as well. But a lot of those categories were for premium grains, which is something that's really important in Tierlan, but also extremely important for farmers to give them a premium over other grains.
Yeah, and I suppose when, okay, so we were lucky enough to have the highest price in a high price year for 22, but I'd say, and premiums are a nice little bonus on top, but I suppose it's when prices are at the other end of the scale that you really appreciate how important those bonuses are. Now, the sum of money paid out wasn't insignificant. You know, we had big contributors to that. Obviously, our own food-grade oats and more importantly, our gluten-free oats returned significant premiums. Malt and barley was a big winner for growers this year. But like, it's an extra €3 million into a pool of 1,100 growers. €40 a tonne on average over. It's not money to be sneezed at in any year, but listen, we'd hope to be able to do it again very soon.
Yeah, and also, you know, there's a rotation in there as well. You know, you have the Here I Seed Rape, you know, there's break crops in there within those premium crops as well, which is very important as well.
Ah, yeah, absolutely. And I think Fintan Tracy, our new senior agronomist, has been working on the dream rotation, which is basically a Tierlan premium grain at every stage in a 5 or a 6 grain rotation. So when we have enough acres for everybody in those, then I think we'll rest easy. But until then, we'll just keep working hard in that regard.
Very good. John, like, we had a tour of the Innovation Centre in Ballarag this morning, and you know, that's a massive thing this morning to go into that and see the investment that's being put into the money that's being invested in that by Tierlan is major, and it's a massive investment in the tillage sector to ensure that we have markets to go to with our products, with our grains, and with those premium grains that you talked about. The focus was on oats this morning, but you're doing a lot more than oats as well.
And to be fair, it's probably been a source of frustration for me. As I mentioned during the awards there, Aoife Murphy announced the investment way back in 2020. COVID intervened and we haven't been able to get people in and out of that place for the last number of years. But to me, it's kind of been the excitement for me has been building in that I've been through it a couple of times now. I've seen what the teams are developing, and it was very good of you today, Siobhan, to come along, and I saw you writing furiously. But it's, I don't think enough people in Ireland can actually get through places like this. Co-ops like Tierlan are investing heavily in the future, and I'd say they need to be, because the ingredients market is a very, very competitive market, and unless you're at the cutting edge, you're probably going backwards. But for me, like, just the breadth of expertise that exists out there, you had Dr. Michelle Collins leading a really, really capable team. Now to have all the equipment they need at their fingertips. So to me, I think things are only going to get better in that respect.
Yeah. Gluten-free oats, John. I was talking to James Hickey, your agronomist there in Kilkenny and Washford, and he said you're nearly full up on the gluten-free oats area. So you've tried to double that this year, and it looks like you've been successful in a very short space of time.
Yep. Yeah, I'd say, okay, there's a couple of reasons. I'd say we have a really good team. So James is our head of technical on the agronomy side. You have Fintan managing the team. The lads have a very good relationship with our grain growers, okay? They're serviced through the branch network. We work really closely with those growers, right? But just in terms of having access to so many acres for gluten-free, I'd say it's a testament to the hard work that the team have put in and the relationship that they have with those growers. But there's also a piece where I'd say winter sowings, I'd say a lot of people missed the opportunity to get in a bit of winter wheat last fall when they looked at the premium that was available. They'll still have a first wheat to follow the gluten-free oats. So I'd say when they weighed up the opportunity, some things went in our favour. So we're delighted to say we're very close to having sufficient acres. So now it's just a matter of making sure that we get those into the ground now, and hope, fingers crossed, for a good growing year and a successful harvest.
Yeah, no, definitely slots to be filled, so people should contact their agronomist. Listen, John, thanks a million for talking to us, and well done on all the work so far.
Delighted. Thanks very much, Siobhan.
Thanks very much to John for talking to us there at the Grain Awards in Kilkenny on Monday. Now, I'm diverging a bit, but in management last week, I said I'd keep you up to date on the rules around buffer zones. So we know that the buffer zone at watercourses has increased to 3 metres under the new cap. But there's also, in the SMRs in the new cap, there's some questions around buffer zones it says you can't spread fertilizer and chemicals near watercourses, and I'm just trying to define what those watercourses are. So at a recent Chagas event, it's thought that you can't spread fertilizer and or pesticides beside anybody that could carry water, you know, any dry drain. I haven't got an update from the department on this. I have been onto the press office about this a couple of times, but as soon as I have that update, I'll get that up online. It'll be in the paper. I know people need to know this, as you know, as they continue to sow and start to sow. So as soon as I have that, it will be up on the website. Now, we'll change tack a bit. So I was at the BASF technical conference last week. It was a really informative day, but with a noticeable focus on the new sustainable use regulations and meeting the farm to fork targets. You know, for a chemical conference, it was a big change. Jake Freestone was the keynote speaker, a farmer trying to cut inputs. He's coming up shortly. But first, here's BASF's Dave Leahy, who'll tell us a bit about, I suppose, the change in how BASF are operating. Dave, we just had a really good conference there, and I suppose, you know, we've more and more challenges now in crop production and more diseases, but you showed us a lot of different options there today. Ramularia was something that we started off the day on. It's a very difficult disease, I suppose, to control, but what you brought up was, you know, managing Rhynchosporium, managing net blotch in order to avoid ramularia at the end of the season.
Yeah, and I suppose, look at the whole ramularia piece, really began to come into focus when chlorothalonil was revoked, essentially. And yeah, Siobhan, you're right. Look, the management of key primary diseases like net blotch and Rhynchosporium are absolutely central in delaying the onset of ramularia later on in the season. But equally, what needs to be kept in mind is managing stress on the crop, Siobhan. Yeah. You know, we're all here looking for another solution out of a can.
Yeah.
The reality is that there's actually so much in our control that we can already do to manage that crop. You know, you remember down in Cork last year and you reported on it during the summer with the huge BYDV and take-all impact we had. Ramularia robbed those crops of yield as well, because that was the stress precursor. But certainly, look, there are solutions there. Fulpet will have a role to play. Revisol will have a role to play. But it's really that programmed approach and just being conscious of what we're doing on those barley crops and how we're managing them.
And yourself and Stephen spoke a lot about protecting and creating yield, and that's key in barley. We need to protect our tillers earlier on, but then you spoke about getting barley to a point in time and keeping it green for as long as possible. That's essential now, and I suppose, you know, we're avoiding disease, but we need to keep it green for longer in order to maximise our yield.
Absolutely, Siobhan. And look, we know the name of the game with barley production is plants per metre squared. And, you know, you get your 300 plants and make a tiller and you get up to your 1,000, 1,200 shoots per metre squared, you are really sucking diesel. Yeah. But as you said, and you're right, the challenge then is to extend that green leaf area and to allow that grain to fill to the maximum potential, which we know it's capable of doing.
Yeah.
Obviously, the challenge with that is late season disease, and certainly ramularia is part of that. But I do think, and certainly Stephen Kildare would echo the same comment, and equally Deirdre Doyle and Chagas, that we just need to get barley to a point in time in terms of ramularia control and get over that hump from a grain fill period. And then certainly we can achieve those high yields which we aspire to.
Yeah. I suppose we always talk about resistance to chemicals in wheat and not so much in barley. And it's probably something that's very overlooked. You know, there's probably a lot of growers maybe take more risks on barley, if I could find a better way of saying it. But we definitely need to improve our chemistry and our rotations on chemicals.
Yeah, and that's a very, very fair comment. And to be fair, you know, you hit the nail on the head. With wheat, yes, we're absolutely very, very aware of chemistry from a resistance perspective, not overly reliance perhaps on one single chemistry family on wheat. With barley, we're probably a little bit cavalier. There's a lot of people out there, Siobhan, think that proline is the only product or prothioconazole is the only active that's needed on barley. The reality is we need a suite of chemistry. We need a diversity of chemistry. And it's about, I suppose, using those chemistries in combinations, let alone from a disease management perspective, but equally prolonging the life of each active. And we have actives. We have SDHIs like Xemium. We have strobilurins like Pyraclostrobin. And we have another azole in the form of Revisol. So perhaps that over-reliance on prothioconazole, which was once there, you know, perhaps we don't need to be as over-reliant on it. Tom McCabe alluded to it in his wheat presentation. You know, 10 years ago, he was running the risk of, or highlighting the risk of over-reliance on prothioconazole and wheat.
Yeah.
are we heading into a similar situation on barley? Perhaps we are.
Yeah, we're still saying that today, yeah. A good presentation by Tom as well. And Dave, like, there was a big focus today as well on things like the sustainable use regulations, the new regulations coming in, and like I suppose BSF, those regulations are, and the reduction of pesticides are focused on the amount, but also the risk. And then we heard from BSF talking about safer chemicals and that kind of thing. You might just mention a bit on that.
Yeah, and look, that's a good point, Siobhan. We know the challenges that are coming down the track in terms of the pesticide reduction targets which are being imposed on us by 2030. BASF are certainly well aware of that. The point which you're alluding to is chemistry and chemicals and products are all classed in terms of a ranking in terms of their hazardous usage. One of the positives with a lot of the newer chemistry coming to the market is it actually has to jump through a lot of hoops from a safety perspective and from a hazard perspective. You know, take the likes of Revisol. Revisol rates really, really favorably compared to the likes of, say, some of those older, more perhaps cruder insecticides which we were using perhaps 10 years ago. So certainly from a new chemistry perspective and certainly from a, I suppose, a pesticide perspective in its own right, the newer chemistry certainly looks like it's in a much better place from a reduction perspective coming down the line. The challenge is, fair enough that chemistry perhaps is in a good place from a legislation perspective, we need to be conscious how we mine that chemistry from a technical perspective going forward as well.
Yes, it's getting harder and harder to bring chemicals to the market. There was a big focus today on carbon, diversity, environment, climate, and we had Jake Freestone at the end, and he's on the podcast as well. But it's, I suppose, we had a talk on protected urea as well. Like, for a chemical company, it was a very different conference to what we would have had 10 years ago when Tom was bringing up that slide about Proline. Like, I suppose, is that the way things are moving now? Is this all part of your strategy?
Siobhan, I think it has to be part of, and it's not so much a strategy, I think it's a way of life.
Yeah.
You know, the past 4 or 5 years, we've been talking about integrated pest management anyway. Is this really any different?
Yeah.
Only it's from a business perspective. BASF are well aware of the challenges which arable growers in Ireland are facing and equally in continental Europe. A lot of it's been legislatively driven. Hence, look at protected urea. Who would have ever thought BASF would have had an involvement in fertilizer? That's certainly one facet to the bone, but equally the whole sustainability and the whole carbon end of things. I know that you've had a couple of discussions with some of my colleagues around the carbon calculators which are coming down the track. Really and truly, Siobhan, the day of any perceived chemical company seeing a solution out of a can is perhaps drifting away. I think we now, as growers, as advisors, need to look at the wider picture from a solution perspective. And certainly within BASF, we're well aware of that. And these are some of the tools which we're developing.
Thanks, Dave. Look, interesting times ahead and a super conference. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks a million, Siobhan. Cheers.
Now, next up, the one you've been waiting for. He features on this week's Tillage Pages, so you can have a read of those pages as well. Here's Jake Freestone. Jake, thanks so much for joining us. We've just had a great talk from you here and the crowd were enthralled. I suppose you're well known for your work in regenerative agriculture, but what you said at the start was your main reason for entering into regenerative ag was an economic decision.
Yeah, absolutely. We looked at the figures of arable crop production, tillage crops, back in 2011, and we could see lower prices, increasing costs, less support from the government.
Yeah.
And actually, then it was a case of how do we establish these crops with less expense, but not compromising the output and the yield, because that's what you need at the end of the day.
Yeah.
And that got us into, you know, thinking about minimal tillage, then direct drilling, which we started playing around with our existing equipment that we had at the time.
Yeah.
We did that for a few years and then bought a direct drill in 2015. And then from there, you look at the whole system and, you know, what makes direct drilling? Well, that's cover cropping. And then you learn about cover cropping and what to put in those species, mixes, when to graze them, when to just destroy them.
Yeah.
And it takes off from there.
Yeah. And cover cropping is a major part of your system, and you showed us pictures there of loads of different mixes and talked about diversity. And how important is diversity in those mixes?
Oh, it's hugely important. If you just think about the different rooting aspects of just two different plants. You know, linseed, nice little thin tap root that'll go down, quite good at removing compaction. Yeah. And then you've got something else like Phacelia, which is quite a bit more shallow rooted maybe, but very sort of tilth creation. So the more of diversity that you can put in there, the more benefits you have in the soil, the more interactions that those plants will have with the biology in the soil. And the better the soil then starts to function, which we can take advantage of.
Yeah, and then benefits then as well. Like you said, you've completely cut out insecticide on your farm now since neonics were abandoned. So like huge savings there, and obviously better for the environment. Have you noticed more predators on the farm? You mentioned spiders there, and you had a picture of a ladybird eating an aphid. Like, can you visibly see it on farm?
We can see a lot more farmland birds, yes. And for me, that's a really good indicator that they're feeding on insects. So we've logically got more insects. I mean, and it's a really nice feeling. You know, you're walking down the farm and a group of a couple of hundred linnets get up from a cover crop field and things like that. And actually, it's a very positive feeling. And farmers, you know, farmers need that positivity. We're so often kind of branded as, you know, environmental vandalism.
Yeah.
And we're destroying the planet and the water and all the rest of it. But actually, you know, with the right management, you can reverse all those sorts of challenges.
Yeah. You mentioned companion cropping as well, and insect distraction and weed suppression. So is companion crop, is that another big factor on your farm? Or, I mean, I suppose, what mixes are you growing, or what works best in your companion cropping?
Yeah, companion cropping is something that Andy Howard, another Nuffield scholar, got me onto in 2014, his project.
A lot of farmers would be familiar with Andy.
They would know Andy, yeah. So companion cropping in rape, because that was the easiest one to get done. Yeah. So we plant oilseed rape with burseem clover, with phacelia, with buckwheat and with vetch.
Yeah.
It doesn't cost us any more than the pre-emergence herbicide that we have now dropped out. So actually it's cost neutral.
Yeah.
It's decoying and moving things away from flea beetle. It's providing nutrition by the vetches and the clovers capturing nitrogen. So in oilseed rape, for me, it's a no-brainer. The challenge is companion cropping with other species. And there are people, Andy's a great one, doing oats and beans together, for instance.
Yeah.
I haven't quite gone down that route yet. Maybe that's something to look at for the future.
It's something probably Irish farmers have only been dipping their toes into now, and probably a small number of them at that. Someone from the crowd asked you about glyphosate. How important is glyphosate to your system? I know you said you were using less of it, but it's probably more crucial when you are using it.
It is important. And, you know, we mustn't shy away from having that discussion with everybody. If you think of the unintended consequences of not having it, you know, we're back to flailing off cover crops, cultivations, subsequent carbon release, potential for soil erosion. And glyphosate, while it's available, and I think it will be, you know, it's a safe product. If you look at its toxicity against other things, we actually got a little bit wrong this year, and we planted, I should have mentioned it actually, we planted some wheat and then didn't get the glyphosate put on before the wheat came up.
Right.
It was windy and it was rainy.
Yeah.
And we've ended up having to put another two sets of herbicides on that crop. So we're putting more active ingredient on the field. It's costing us more money. And the control is going to be poorer than if we'd use just the glyphosate. So it's a conversation that we need to have. We need to keep having it, but it is critical to the way we're farming. But also, you know, in a conventional tillage system, creating stale seed beds where you've got black grass, some people are spraying off crops before harvest. I'm not sure that's such a good decision, really, when you're that close to harvest. I know it's got a 7-day harvest interval, so nothing illegal.
Yeah.
But I think using it at the right time in the life of the crop is really important.
Absolutely, and crucial to keeping it, I suppose, registered as well. You mentioned foliar N as well, and that's something that's helped you to reduce your nitrogen significantly on farm. So how long have you been using foliar N, and I suppose where do you see it going? Is it across all crops now?
It is across all crops now, yes. So we're using a lot more organic manures, so a lot of poultry litter, high N. But the foliar N is a really important one for us because it sort of bypasses our high pH soils, so its efficacy, its efficiency is really high. Which means we can put less on and less gets volatilized or leached out of the soil. So it's also targeted right onto the crop. So whenever we're going through now with nutrition or plant protection products or herbicides, we're putting a little bit of foliar N in. We're using soil applied nitrogen early on at the start of the spring, and then we're sort of topping that up either with another soil applied and then foliar after that.
Something then you mentioned near the end, Jake, the Green Farm Collective, and I suppose we hear about carbon and trading carbon and biodiversity all the time, and this is something now that you've moved into. So I suppose, where do you see this going? When will people maybe be able to get paid for carbon or for doing good for diversity? I know there's banks and people want to pay farmers for nature and things like that. So how far away from all of this?
So the Green Farm Collective has already traded carbon and biodiversity. So one of our members has done some carbon with our marketing company, which is Jane Craigie Marketing.
Okay, yeah.
And then Tim has done some biodiversity trading as well, in terms of actually planting specific biodiversity for somebody, and that was a pollen and nectar mix and some cover crops. So the opportunity is already there. It's very early days in the carbon market, but we're using Trinity AgTech Sandy platform because it's the best one on the market in my opinion, in terms of how vigorous the calculations are. And we need to have another good discussion about this, because carbon is going to be so important, and we need to make sure that what we're doing is robust, it's audited, it can be verified properly, because in 5 or 10 years' time, we don't want to be on the wrong end of some kind of lawsuit to say that, you didn't calculate it properly, and then they're going to want to come back for money. So it's early days, there are opportunities, but farmers need to start looking at where they can save carbon and how they can start to build it into their system, even before they start trading. So for us, we think that we should only be able to sell carbon that is below our carbon neutral, our net zero point. And I think that's a really important thing to be able to do, because it's not just, well, if you take 20 kilos of N off, then I can sell that carbon, because you're still emitting a lot of carbon. So there's a long way to go, I think, in terms of getting the regulatory stuff in place, but the opportunities are there, and we're just starting to dip our toe in.
Jake, it was a fascinating talk, and thanks so much for joining us, and I know people will be very interested, so they can follow you on social media and YouTube. Thanks very much. Okay, look, we'll move on and we'll go to grain prices, and they've been on the rise this week. As I record here now, the Matif wheat price is at 284.75. That's the December price. And it's risen from Friday to Friday there. It rose about 10 euro in the week. It did rise 10 euro to last Friday. It's in the green. There was a slight dip last week there. Strategy Grains announced that the EU wheat production was to increase. But look, grain prices certainly in a good position at the minute. And indeed, when I talk about that BASF conference, Keith Dawson was talking at that conference, and he actually farms in the Ukraine. And it just kind of puts in perspective when we're talking about grain prices and maybe saying that they're low or whatever, there's people in far worse positions than Irish farmers. So it just puts things into a little bit of perspective. So that's where wheat is. Then Glanbia prices this week, 223 for green feed barley next harvest, 233 for wheat. And then big news this week from Dairy Gold. So Dairy Gold came out with a minimum contract price for beans for the 2023 harvest of 285 euro per tonne. Look, I think that's a great price. It's a minimum price considering where markets are at the minute. I think farmers, it'll give farmers confidence to go out and sow beans, because, payments are going to be up from the Department of Agriculture. It is a really good option to sow beans with no nitrogen, but there is a slight fear that the bean acreage wasn't going to increase maybe as much as it should. And I think this beans price now has really, it's a statement from Dairy Gold to encourage farmers to go out and plant those crops. And there's plenty more on that on online and in the paper as well. So that's where we're at on grain prices this week. Look, the grain trends report is in the back of the paper, and there's oilseed rape prices in that as well. Now, moving on to weather. So the report from Met Éireann, Friday, dull, wet conditions, most areas, further outbreaks of rain coming in from the Atlantic through the day, 11 to 14 degrees. And widespread rain will continue into Friday night, turning heavy at times with possible spot flooding. So a big change there. Saturday, another dull day with scattered outbreaks of rain, although many areas will remain dry. The rain will most likely to occur in Leinster early on and in Ulster later in the evening, 8 to 13 degrees, winds light and variable. Sunday, dull conditions expected to persist throughout. Mostly dry though, temperatures of 9 to 11 degrees, light southwesterly breezes. Maybe some heavier showers on Sunday night. And then Monday to Wednesday, the outlook is conditions are likely to remain changeable for the early days of next week, with further outbreaks of rain each day. And early indications are that Monday will see the best of the dry spells, with the rain turning more persistent on Tuesday and Wednesday, and temperatures expected to be above normal for the first time for this time of year, and winds possibly turning blustery on Wednesday. So look, certainly it looks like if you've spraying to do or anything, Monday is probably the day to do it. But look, it's been a good run of weather so far. And I know, look, there's people out in different parts of the country who are only maybe getting to the fields this week or got to them at the weekend. You know, everyone hasn't had good conditions, but I think we've done well so far this spring. So look, that's it for this week's podcast. Thanks a million to all our guests. We had quite a lot of guests on this week's show. Stay safe over the next few days and over the next week. And look, it's a busy time on farm, but it's early in the year. And, you know, just take your time doing jobs and keep safe and keep the tillage flag flying.
We hope you enjoyed this Irish Farmers Journal podcast. You can find all our podcasts at farmersjournal.ie/podcast and on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.